Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Compartment Number 6, Brighton 4th, and The Lost Daughter. So, could we have gotten a number in that last one?
I'm afraid not. We've only got 2 out of 3 this time, but we also have three films from different parts of the world. So, I think we have some fairly interesting stuff going for us this week. These are all good movies. I have to say, I really liked every one of them, and I want to start off with Compartment Number 6. This is by a Finnish filmmaker named Juho Kosmanen, and he made his directorial debut, his only... Before this, his previous theatrical feature, this is only his third theatrical film, Compartment Number 6, and his last one came out way back in 2016. Since then, he was involved with a TV series, but he has not made a lot of movies, but he's really good. That movie that came out in 2016 was a prize-fighting drama called The Happiest Day in the Life of Ali Mackie, and I totally recommend it. It's really quite a wonderful and even delightful film in many ways. And Compartment Number 6 is another really good film by this very fine filmmaker. So, Compartment Number 6 focuses on a young woman, and she is Finnish, and she has been studying in Moscow, and apparently having an affair with a professor of hers, who has gotten her all enthusiastic about the idea of going way up above the Arctic Circle on a long, long trek to look at some petroglyphs up there, some ancient rock inscriptions. And so, okay, they're going to go, and then all of a sudden the prof backs out of the trip, leaving our young main character, Laura, on her own. And she decides she's going to go anyway. Now, what's interesting here is that she doesn't really know anything about the petroglyphs. She doesn't really have any deep interest in geology. That's not actually her main field. She really wanted to do this because she was in love with this prof who she was going to go with. But now she's just decided to go on her own. And so she gets on the train, and that's where Compartment Number 6 comes in. She's going to be on this train. She's going to be on this long journey. It's going to be really cold. She's going someplace she's never been before. She's not sure what she's in for. And then it turns out she has a roommate in this train compartment, and he is a young man named Lyota, and he is just a drunk and a boor and a nasty guy. And holy cow, in the movie audience, going to survive a journey with this guy, much less this poor young woman who's now in this compartment with him, and apparently there's no way she can switch to another one. This is it. She's stuck. So you can imagine what happens from here, although the movie is full of a lot of surprises. It turns out that once he sobers up and once he settles in a little bit, he's not quite as awful as he seemed at first. And the two of them get to know each other, and they eventually have some little adventures together as the journey continues. And eventually, yep, she ends up way above the Arctic Circle, and she ends up near the petroglyphs, and I won't say how the movie comes out. But it's mainly about what takes place in Compartment Number 6 and adjacent to it, as these two get to know each other and settle into a sort of relationship with each other. And there are some mildly interesting secondary characters along the way. It sounds like not a whole lot happens in Compartment Number 6. Actually, a lot does happen, although it's mostly fairly small stuff that's dramatic in sort of modest ways. But I really enjoyed watching it. It really sort of held me the whole way. The acting is really, really excellent, and you just can't help sympathizing with the situation of being stuck in a train compartment with somebody who apparently is going to be completely insufferable, and then turns out to be okay sufferable, and then turns out to be actually sort of really a nice person. And again, all sorts of developments happen along the way. Mainly, I am very, very pleased to see this very gifted Finnish filmmaker, Juho Kosmanen, still making work and doing interesting stuff, and I think that his future is really going to be one to watch. There have been quite a lot of already honors given to Compartment Number 6, and I think it deserves them, and I think it's really worth catching up with. I recommend it to everybody. It's a really interesting and very, very nice, just a very nice movie in all sorts of ways. And the same thing goes for the second movie I want to talk about today, Jill, which is called Brighton Forth. And this is a movie about a guy from the country, the nation of Georgia. And it is made by a filmmaker from the nation of Georgia, Levon Kwagashvili. And it's another just really, really good movie with all kinds of interesting stuff that goes on in it. So it starts off in Georgia, in the capital of Georgia, Tbilisi. And we meet our main character, whose name is Kaki. And he is a wrestler, a former wrestler, a former champion wrestler. And in fact, he is played by an actor who himself is a former real-life wrestler, not a professional actor. His training and life has been in the wrestling world, but now he has turned actor. And oh, he is very, very good in this movie. His name is Levon Tediashvili. And so this former actor is playing, excuse me, this former wrestler is playing this wrestler. And there they are in Tbilisi. And we find out that he's a very nice man, but he's got some problems in his family. We discover this at the very beginning of the movie. He has a brother who is a very hot-tempered guy and who is also a gambler. And poor Kaki tries to help his brother out, but he can't stay for long. Because, and by the way, his wife has also been injured. She is suffering from physical disabilities herself. But poor Kaki can't stick around and help out these family members, his brother and his wife, because he's got a son who's in the United States, and the son really needs some help because the son has been running into some trouble. He is in medical school in the U.S., but, well, there's some difficulties that Kaki has to try to go and help him get through. So Kaki travels to the United States, and most of the movie does take place in the United States, in Brooklyn, where Kaki goes and finds his only son, So-So, in medical school, except guess what? He's not in medical school at all. In fact, he is working as a mover. That's what he does. Medical school has not worked out for him, at least not so far. But much more to the point, we have another gambling problem here. So-So, the son, has racked up an enormous gambling debt to a mobster. Poor So-So owes $14,000 to this mobster, and he's not going to earn that kind of money as a mover. Also, he really needs to get married. He needs a green card, and he needs a whole lot of money to marry the woman who's agreed to marry him if he'll pay for it. So there are real money problems here, and also possibly real mob problems here as well. So Kaki now finds himself not helping his son, the medical student, but helping his son, the mover and gambler and debtor. And that's where the movie is going. So what's going on here is this stuff all sounds pretty dramatic, and it is pretty dramatic. But mainly, it's sort of a character study of Kaki as he runs into these various problems and tries to help people out and tries to help people get through problems much worse than his own problems, but they become his own problems. And he runs into some other Russians who are there in Brooklyn, and he gets to know them, and he's living in this sort of hostel, and it's, you know, getting along with other people and meeting other people, and there are some interesting minor characters in the film and so forth. And then along the way, there turns out to be a kidnap scheme that Kaki gets a little bit involved in, which is very, very odd. There turns out to be a guy who runs a local hotel who's been cheating his cleaners, his cleaning persons, and some people want to help those cleaning persons out, and Kaki gets involved in that, and oh, there's all kinds of complications that ensue, and the end of the movie is, shall we say, bittersweet, perhaps more bitter than sweet, but it's a very, very beautiful ending that the whole movie eventually gets its way around to. It's not a perfect film. There's one scene, deep into the movie, where there's a minor character, an older woman, who gets involved with Kaki very briefly, and it's just bad, bad acting. It's a way overdone scene, and I'm very, very surprised that the director allowed it to stay in the movie. But actually, except for that one scene, the movie is really, really very beautifully done, and we have a mixture here of professional actors and non-professional actors, people who are just acting maybe for the first time, or who certainly don't do this for a living. Again, the main character, Kaki, Rocky is the best example of that, because we have the wrestler played by the wrestler. But there's a number of other people in the movie, too. And in a way, we have here a hearkening back to the great old tradition of Italian neorealism back from the 1940s and 1950s, which remains hugely influential on international cinema to this day, where we have, again, this great willingness to mix people who do acting for a living and people who don't do acting for a living and put them side by side. We also have some really, really nice filming going on in Brooklyn and in the area. The title, Brighton 4th, refers to a street where some of the action takes place. And again, we have some very nice local color in Georgia at the very beginning of the movie, and then after that in the United States. Very, very fine acting, a very dramatic story, and terrifically interesting main character. It played in a really terrifically interesting performance. So really, really fine work, and I really recommend people seeking out Brighton 4th. It's just a splendid movie, a really, really good picture. So far, this year is very, very young, and we've got some very, very good stuff out there in movie theaters and streaming that people can go to see, and I suggest they seek these things out. And our final movie today, which is probably the one that's gotten the most publicity of the three I'm talking about, is The Lost Daughter. Now, this is the first movie directed by the incredibly fine actor Maggie Gyllenhaal. I think she is one of the most talented performers in movies today, and she has been for a long, long time. A terrific, terrific performer. And now she has turned movie director, and she has done a really, really fine job with her first movie. It is based on a novel which came out back in 2006 by Elena Ferrante, and it's interesting that the novel is very, very interiorized. It's all about the psychology of the main character, whose name is Lida. And we have all this, her ruminations and her thoughts and her feelings, very, very internalized and interiorized. And of course, it's hard to do that sort of thing in the movies. But Gyllenhaal really succeeds to a very, very large extent in making this all work. And Gyllenhaal, by the way, also wrote the screenplay, so I'm really impressed with her about all this. So The Lost Daughter is about a woman. She is a sort of a middle-aged college professor, and she goes off on a vacation to a beachfront resort just to get away for a while, and she really, really needs some downtime and some relaxing time and all of this. So she goes off to this place to relax and sort of recoup her mental energies, and she meets some people there. There's a caretaker played by the wonderful Ed Harris, and there's a young man who runs the bar on the beach, and she gets to know these people, and it looks like she's going to have a nice relaxing time, only then a whole bunch of other people suddenly show up at the beach. They are Americans, and they are noisy, and they are just, they're just a very rowdy bunch, and it looks like, well, there's not going to be a whole lot of peace and quiet there, although she can always retreat to her room. Well, anyway, Leda does get to know these Americans. She does get to know several of them, and she gets involved in some of their lives a tiny little bit, and they get involved in her life. But mainly, a couple of them, a mother and her little girl, spark memories in Leda of her own past, which involves her own bringing up of her own two girls who are now grown up. And we have a whole lot of flashbacks to when Leda was much younger, and when she was she had very demanding children, a husband who was not helpful to her at all, and was balancing her academic career with her home life. We have flashbacks to that. And with the tremendous mental unease that she has felt throughout her life as a parent and as a professional, and about how this is now affecting her life as a middle-aged woman approaching a new stage of her life. So the sort of central event, to me at least, in The Lost Daughter, is a little girl, that little girl I mentioned before, loses her doll on the beach. And interestingly, Lida finds the doll, but does not give it to the little girl. Instead, she sort of spirits it away and keeps it herself, secretly. The little girl is really, really upset by her missing doll. The little girl's mother is really, really upset by how upset her little girl is over the missing doll. And yet Lida mysteriously holds on to this doll. It seems to mean something very deep and very mysterious to her that we can't quite figure out, but is clearly wrapped up with these flashbacks that we're having to Leda's earlier life. So The Lost Daughter is very much a psychological drama, even a psychological melodrama, but it's done in a very subtle way, a very sensitive way, and we get to know a lot of things about Leda, but not to know everything about her. And some things about her remain mysterious right to the end, I think. It's a fascinating movie, and I have not mentioned yet that the main character is played by Olivia Colman, who is just another sensational performer. She was wonderful as Queen Elizabeth II in The Crown on television. She is excellent in another recent film, just as a narrator, The Electrical Life of Lewis Wayne. She was in The Father recently with Anthony Hopkins. She's a wonderful, wonderful performer, and she gives a superb performance in The Lost Daughter. So here we have Maggie Gyllenhaal as a writer-director. We have Olivia Colman doing what she does best. And by the way, Jessie Buckley is sensational as one of the younger women in the movie. So just wonderful, wonderful work. A really good movie. Seek it out, The Lost Daughter. It will reward you. And so that is my sort of international story this week, Jill.
Which is wonderful, and we thank you. And actually, as you said, three interesting sounding movies: Compartment Number 6, Brighton 4th, and The Lost Daughter.